Another common mistake that I see both in websites, direct mail letters, and other types of marketing is using no headline or having a headline that I call a me headline.
I still can't believe that people would not use a headline on a marketing piece. Ted Nicholas says that is one of the biggest crimes you can commit, and you should be sent to direct response jail if you put out a marketing piece and don't put a headline on there.
What I've seen, Jonathan, is that in a direct mail sales letter, it's okay to not have a headline at times if it's a personalized letter, and then the first sentence really becomes the headline. But in a website, you can't personalize it. And so I think in a website, when you're giving your sales letter, you have to have a headline.
Well, the whole web is based on headlines, text, and graphics. They even have special codings on the internet for special codes just for headlines.
Well, I also think it ties into a lot of what people trying to copy what big businesses do, especially image advertising, which do the little tricks and the weird sayings that you have to figure out in lots of pictures. And people are assuming in their own business that they have to do the same thing. And they're not multi-million dollar companies broadcasting on TV. They're basically hitting people either at a website or a direct mail piece. They need a headline to be able to open it up. The image isn't going to do it for them.
Absolutely, and you know, we're not big companies. We can't afford, we're guerrilla marketers, and we don't have billions of dollars to throw at a marketing project to see whether or not it works. The worst thing you can have at the top of a letter or a web page or a direct response ad is your picture, your logo, or just the beginning of your letter. You must have a headline. The headline really makes it tells the audience what your project or what your program or what your ad is all about. I mean, we've talked at length about headlines, so you know, I think everybody understands the importance of them.
That was in another product, and that may not people may not have this one. What I want to say about headlines is this: the traditional way of explaining is that it's the ad for the ad. The reason that the headline is so crucial is because if you don't have a headline, then you may not get people's attention and pull them into the rest of what you have to say. And the same thing, it would be kind of like if you're in a sales situation and you don't grab people's attention right off the bat, then they're not going to hear anything else that you have to say. If you don't get people with your headline, then they're not going to read the rest of your ad, they're not going to read the rest of your sales letter, they're not going to read your website, and because of that, then you don't have any chance of making a sale. People that have tested this have found that you know, one headline outpulls another by a factor of up to 21 times. And in fact, Jonathan, my testing online and in direct mail, I can verify that. I know that you've done extensive testing online and have found just enormous differences in one headline versus another, which just shows how powerful the headline is.
Well, I'd like to do a little illustration for the people. Unless you're driving in your car listening to this, I'd like you to please close your eyes just for a second. Marlon pointed out that the difference between a bad headline or no headline and a good headline can be as much as 21 times. In my experience, it's been almost that much, not quite that much, but let's just use the figure 21 times. Close your eyes and just for a second imagine a picture, which is the number that represents the amount of money that you made last year. I don't care how much money that was. Maybe it was $5,000 or $10,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever. Just close your eyes and imagine how much money you made last year as a picture. Now please, multiply that number by 21. Now open your eyes. Now, is that a lot of money? Can everyone agree that that's a pretty substantial amount of money? That's not the difference between 5% and 10%, or the difference between a little money and a little bit more money. That's the difference between what you make and retirement. And quite often, the difference between a bad headline and a good headline is the difference between total and complete failure and a project that can literally make millions and millions of dollars.
Now, I mentioned the me headline, and what that means is very simply just a headline that's talking about you, who you are, what you're doing, what your product is, what your company is doing, and it's focused on you instead of the advantages and benefits that you give to your customers.
Absolutely. The headline should be all about the customers, not about your business. There are some great formulas for headlines. One of my favorite books is called Tested Advertising Methods by a gentleman named John Caples. He's now actually passed away, but for a time he was the head of BBDO, one of the larger advertising agencies in the world. Brilliant direct marketer. Felt that headlines were so important that when he wrote his book, he made the first four chapters of the book entirely about headlines. And one of those chapters is basically headline formulas, which is where I get a lot of my formulas from. And the importance of the headline cannot be overemphasized.
Declan, I'm going to put you on the spot here a second, and you can pass on this question if you want to, but what I want to ask you is this. You've learned a lot in our internet marketing seminars and over the last several years about marketing and headlines. I know that you came into this from more of a multimedia background and a sales background, and it's interesting to see you're really writing some terrific headlines now. And like maybe you to share just a couple insights that you've gotten on either the creation of our headlines or how that you may be restructured in your brain the importance of them that's allowed you to go from writing things that maybe were a little more boring or a little mundane to being able to write headlines that are just fantastic. They really grab people's attention.
And they also use a tremendous amount of curiosity. And I your headlines are fantastic. Can you go ahead and share with us some of your
Yeah, because one of the funny things is a lot of people learn from people who are doing it real well, like you both do it. And when I began, the whole thing that I used headlines at the beginning was I would create this product. I wouldn't even think what it was about. I would just write and write and write and then try to fit a headline that described all this stuff I was writing about. Now I begin with the headline.
So before you even create your product, before you even do any work, you think, what is the headline of this product?
Yeah, what is the headline? But even more, what is the benefit to my customer? What I was beginning, you're talking about the me approach, and I think it's very, very traditional for most people to start out, and that's all you know to talk about. You're talking about yourself. By looking at the benefits, by sitting there breaking it down, it gives me the whole structure of what the product should be. So not only is the headline helping me sell, but it's helped me create something a lot more valuable to my customers. And it's not something that comes at the end that fits into what I want to say, but I try to fit what they want to learn and adapt everything around that and build it around the headline.
So now then, if I get this correctly, and this is not even something that I do, you start with the headline and then you make sure that your product fulfills those benefits that you promise in the headline, and the headline becomes really what your product is all about.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that's where I define my unique sales proposition, my USP. What is it about this product that's going to be unique, which I never thought of until I was finished? You know, it's real funny, coming from multimedia, one of the things you'll know about high-tech companies is we always create and sell the product before it's even finished. I mean, you buy the Windows operating system, it wasn't ready to go.
Some would say it's still not.
It's not ready. But then you talk to people in direct marketing and they say, listen, sell it and then create the product or find the demand. And people look at you like you're crazy when they've accepted the same model for years in technology, because that's a model that works. You have to find the demand before you really create the product.
Right. Well, and in a way, you need to find the demand to find out what that customer base wants.
And then create it around it.
Absolutely. It's much easier to define a market first and then create a product for that market than to create a product and say, now who wants this product? Who's interested in this product? It's much easier to do it in reverse and say, here's a market. What do they want? What can I give to them? What key benefits are they looking for? And then create the product around that central selling theme.
Jonathan, I want to put you on the spot also, because you write just some very compelling headlines. What I'd like to ask you is, there's a certain way that you go about writing your headline, or if there's a certain mental process, or if there's some way that you think about it, or some system or approach you have that helps you create your headlines. You know, what's going on in your head, in your brain, when you're going about writing a headline for something?
Well, the confession is that I swipe most of my great headline ideas. And the best place to get headlines is from existing sales materials that are already working. If you receive a direct mail sales letter, you know, 2, 3, 4 times, and you see an ad month after month after month, one thing you know, since now that everybody knows that the headline is like 90% of the ad, if not more, you know that whatever ad is continuously running is obviously making money. People cannot continue to run an ad that doesn't make money. So I like to get my formulas from a lot of the existing ads. The other thing that I do, and I do this when I have my own product, or especially when I'm working with a client, because when you work with a client, you're getting all that money for it, and you have to be more disciplined. And so my disciplined approach is very simple. I like to go through the product after it's already been created, if I'm working with someone who has created a product, or if they haven't created the product, I like to go through with them and define the top 10 or 15 benefits of their product. What is their product going to do for the customer? And then what I do is I very simply take John Caple's formulas. It's almost, like I said, I feel like I'm in confession now. I take John Caple's formulas and I plug those into the benefits, and on 3x5 cards, I write down about 100 of them. And then what I do is, I usually don't let the client in at this point because they have a different idea, and as an outsider, I usually have a different perspective. I define what I believe are the biggest benefits of this particular product, and those are what I will use to initially test. The ones that don't become benefits, or that don't become headlines, become either sub-headlines, which are headlines that are below your headlines, or even sub-headlines that are throughout a sales letter or ad, or they become bullets, little bulleted, basically mini benefit-oriented headlines that go within the body of a sales letter. So I write them down, I arrange them in order of importance, I use one of the John Caple's formulas, or one of the formulas that I have in my mind. I have 2 or 3 extra ones, and that's where I begin.
And I want to make this point, when you take someone's headline, you know, you don't want to just steal the exact words the person used. What you take is the formula, or the essence, or the idea in the headline. You take and you adapt that to whatever it is that you're selling. I'd like to hook on to here just another point about headlines, which is that sometimes you can, what the headline will do is allow you to attract a larger audience, and that's the reason that a different headline may pull a greater response. The benefit you put in your headline is of extreme importance. Let me just give you a very simple example. There's a product which, as of this taping, is a relatively new product, and it's a Visa card, but it's called a Visa checking card. And the idea of it is that you can go, and instead of writing a check and having to pull out your ID and everything, you can use that Visa checking card. So all of the ads that they're doing for this talk about, well, you can use this card, you don't have to present any ID, and it's very quick and convenient. However, the reason I personally use the Visa checking card is because it allows all of my information and purchases to be tracked, and it all comes out on my computer in Quicken. However, if you were writing an ad and put the essence of that idea in a headline, what you do is really limit your market, because only so many people have computers, and out of all the people that have computers, only a certain number of them have Quicken. Out of the ones that have Quicken, only a certain number of people have Quicken actually attached to their bank account so that they can download information. So if you were putting that benefit in a headline, you would tremendously limit your sales. So what they did in marketing the Visa checking card is that they found the bigger benefit that appealed to the broader audience, which is simply being able to purchase things as you would with a check, but without the hassle of trying to find your driver's license and ID and all that junk.
You know, one of the ways that people use headlines is to qualify customers, and a mistake that they use is to over-qualify a customer. It's not wrong to qualify a customer initially or to attract the attention of the type of customer that you're looking for. What's wrong is to limit the audience in the headline. The limitation should be in the sales material. The qualification should be in the sales material. You want to get as many people to read the ad as possible, and they will stop reading it when they say, oh, this isn't about me, or this isn't for me, or this product doesn't meet my benefits, or doesn't meet my needs, or doesn't give me what I want. The secret is to attract the wide net with the headline to slightly qualify with a subheadline, and then the ad copy is what really brings down the qualification. That's why you need to identify your big benefits, your massive, huge benefits that appeal to 95% of your target audience.
Another way of looking at this is I like to look at it as hypotheses. This may be a little abstract for some people, but I like to form hypotheses about different reasons I think someone might purchase a product. And you could say they might purchase it because they want adventure in their life, or they may want this, or they may want that. And you come up with basic ideas of the reason someone might buy a product, and you form headlines based on those, and then you test those hypotheses with your headlines, and then you're making sure you're not doing 100 versions of one hypothesis or one benefit or one idea. You make certain that you're testing different ideas.
Yeah, well, now Visa is such a great example because ultimately they want everybody to do what you're doing right now. But by making it general, by bringing everybody in, they're developing their back end and they're getting them to plug in, and the headline gets everybody, not just the limited ones.
I'd like to bring up a marketing mistake that's simple but very common, which is just not following up on leads systematically. How many times do you buy something that's an expensive product or expensive service, and no one ever follows up to say thank you from buying from us, to develop a little relationship or a little loyalty? I hate that when you spend, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 on something and you don't even get a thank you letter or a thank you card, or you get one, but it's a little form letter or a little form card, and it's obviously and blatantly so. That's part of it. And then the second step is they never follow up with you again to ask you to buy something else.
Well, you're talking about a couple of things. One is people who request information and then never get it, which is like probably the worst sin. Here's someone has... You've run this big lead generating campaign and you've generated all these leads. People have like busted their butt to get back to you. People have just jumped through hoops to like get your information, and you refuse to send it out to them, which is unthinkable. The other thing is, like you pointed out, when people buy something from you, you know, it's better to receive actually a bad thank you note than no thank you note. But if you're going to go to the trouble to send a bad thank you note, what, make it a good thank you note. Personally sign it. I hate to get those thank you notes that are not personally signed on a large order or from a customer, from a big customer.
So as you mentioned, it works both ways. Very important also in your lead generation. Let's say that you're generating leads on the web. You don't just want to send the email to someone once with your information, or send them a letter in the mail just once. It costs you a lot of money to generate a lead, somebody that raises their hands and says, yes, I'm interested. And it only costs you 50 cents or a buck or $2 or whatever to send them some additional information at 2 week or 3 week intervals in the mail, or to send them some follow-up emails on the computer. And so what you can do is track it and find out, well, it's profitable to keep sending to our leads, you know, 2 mail shots or 3 mail shots, or maybe you're making some follow-up telephone calls. It's however you design it. But the point is, don't just respond to a lead once, try to sell them once, and then just drop them.
Yeah, well, I mean, because especially online, you want to use email as your follow-up consistently. Put them on a mailing list. Say, I'm going to give you some content, some information, and remind them of what you're doing. But I think one of the most common mistakes people make with follow-up is they consider it the end. If their follow-up is a sale of a product, they just send it out and they consider it finished. Or if they're just responding to them, they consider it the end, where it really should be the beginning.
Ian, that's a great philosophy. A lot of people don't think like that, but from our standpoint, from marketers, when we do a promotion and the sale is made, in our mind, then the sale is over. The relationship is over. That's the typical way of thinking. However, from the customer's standpoint, when they buy something, that is when the relationship begins, not when it's over. I mean, that's when the customer feels like, okay, now we work together, not before. Beforehand, I wasn't a customer. That was something that we had a lot of difficulty getting through to our agents when I was an insurance broker. Very, very important to think that the sale is the beginning of the relationship.
Well, the other point, I'd make a couple points on following up on your leads. There's several ways you can do it. You can add on additional bonuses so that in your follow-up contacts, whether it's by phone, by email, or by regular mail, you can add on additional bonus the next time, and then maybe the next time you contact them, you add on another, and it becomes very compelling. The alternative to that is you can just lower the price, and you come up with different reasons for lowering your price. Maybe you leave off some bonuses, or you have some slightly damaged goods or whatever. But that was called a marketing consultant named Dan Kennedy calls it the Charles Atlas method, because in the old days when Charles Atlas marketed this muscle building course, he started out with this relatively high price and kept sending you follow-up mailings, and each one, for different reasons, the price was lower and lower and lower. I remember responding when I was barely a teenager. I was 12 or 13 or 14, something like that. And it just got to the point where I'm thinking, I've got to order this. It's so cheap now, and it used to be prices. I've got to do it. It's just a very powerful follow-up method.
What you're talking about is a step-by-step marketing method.
Yes.
When you send to a lead, if they don't buy, remember, they've already demonstrated that they're interested, then you must send to them again. I found that even people who don't buy from me, I always mail to. Another interesting thing is with email, a lot of people will go out. I just talked to a fella, and he had compiled a very large list of people who'd either responded to him via email, or he'd captured their names from areas of the internet and special interest groups and all that stuff. So he asked me what kind of response he could get, and I told him, and he says, well, then what do I do? Like, he says, then I need to go ahead and get another list. I mean, once I've mailed to this 500,000 list and I've gotten my 30 sales or 40 sales, that's it. I said, no. There are probably several thousand sales in that list. You just keep mailing to the same list. It's not sinful to give people your message again. Sometimes they don't get it. Sometimes they didn't read it. Sometimes the headline wasn't right. And what I do, and thanks for reminding us, Merlin, when we send out, first of all, it's okay to send to the same list again. And second, you don't have to have the exact same message. Maybe some people respond to one headline. Maybe some people respond to another headline. If you have a killer headline and it works two or three times, and you're going to do a third emailing or a fourth emailing or even a postcard mailing or whatever kind of mailing you're going to do to that list again, change the headline. Go for a different tack. Maybe the people who had responded before felt that there was something, some unique benefit, and the other people who didn't respond felt that you weren't speaking to them.
You can emphasize different benefits. You can also answer different objections in your follow-up letters. And just that little, those little sequences and thinking about the follow-up that way and making a little longer-term proposition, trying to develop a relationship with the customer, can just make all the difference in the world in your profit.
And let me just say, when someone raises their hand and said, yes, I'm interested, and becomes a lead, that person wants to buy a lot more than someone who has not raised their hand. So instead of developing all new leads, make sure you work your leads really hard before you become obsessed with generating more leads. I say to someone, I said to a guy recently, I said, why generate more leads when you haven't even followed up with the ones you got? I mean, what are you trying to do? Follow up with the ones you got, and then we can worry about generating more leads.
Next mistake, no target market. And I think of some people that have contacted me about this product or that product, and they've had difficulty selling it. And the first thing you want to find out is, who's your target market? And invariably, you get some response like, well, everyone needs this product. When I hear that, I cringe. Everyone needs this product. Everyone's, wants to buy it. And you immediately know the person has not defined a target market. And what I teach people is a concept called an existing market, which is, instead of trying to create a market, you can tap into an existing market where you get endorsed by someone, and it makes it a lot easier to reach that market. The other thing that I teach is called your natural market, which is, let's say you've been a CPA all your life. The most logical people then to sell are the ones that you know, you understand them, you understand their problems, you have relationships, you have contacts. So you begin in your natural market, and then you can go to the vendors and suppliers to that natural market because it's just an easy way to expand. You can also go, let's say that you are a CPA and you're calling on people in that industry. Other businesses will have vendors and suppliers and they will have customers. You can get them to introduce you to their vendors and suppliers and to their customers. And so what you're doing is pursuing a line and pursuing types of people and customers that you have things in common with.
I have found that when someone tells me that their market is everybody, what that usually means is that nobody will buy it. Because they cannot define who they're trying to sell it to, and they cannot formulate a message that appeals to, and I quote unquote, everybody. They must have a message. In order to sell something, you need to have a strong message, and it's impossible to create a message that appeals to everybody. It's much easier to create a message that appeals to a smaller, targeted group of people, because instead of trying to speak to everybody, which of course then you speak to nobody, you speak to a specific market about their concerns, their needs, and more important than their needs, their wants.
Well, one thing, I work on the World Wide Web, and it's all built on targeted marketing. In fact, the whole media is moving towards people basically programming their own channels, seeing what they want, everything that they want. Now, I have to deal with a lot of natural markets. So let's say I set up a dentist online, a dentist who has a lot of relationships with dentists and knows his niche. He knows that natural market. So instead of me sitting here trying to be some genius, I find a way to work with him to approach his natural market and also try to get endorsed to do that.
It's interesting because a related mistake to not having a target market, and this happens more often than you would think, having a target market where everyone's broke.
One of my clients is so funny. He has a product that he sells to the network marketing industry, and he has a lot of problems with bad checks and debt and conversions and credit cards being declined. And he and I were talking recently, and my market happens to be small businesses and people who want to increase their profits with marketing, which, even though that's not the ultimate market of multimillionaires, it happens to be a market that has some money, and you got to have a market with money. And he and I were talking, and he says, you know, I'm having all these problems, I can't figure it out. And I said, well, it's simple. Your market doesn't have any money. And if they don't have any money, they cannot afford to buy what you're selling. You know, forget the desire for a minute. Desire doesn't mean anything unless they have the means to purchase what it is you're selling.